Well, it's the playoffs, which means it's time to catch up with the Ringer's Randy Gisserli, who has been kind enough to join us on the show for each of the last two playoff runs by the Chiefs. Randy, before we dive into the details, exactly what happened to Arrowhead on Sunday, what is your temperature check? How are you feeling about the Chiefs in general, having defeated the Miami Dolphins on Saturday?
Well, my temperature is a lot warmer than Arrowhead was on Saturday night. Let me tell you that. I think it's important to take a step back and remember that the Chiefs won a playoff game this weekend, and we take that for granted now. And it wasn't a particularly competitive game, and we'll talk about all of that. But my God, they won a playoff game, which means 6 years in a row, 6 years of Patrick Mahomes, they have never had a losing record in any postseason under
Crazy.
Patrick Mahomes.
Crazy.
They've only had 1 year in which they didn't have a winning record. That being the first year when they went 1-1. They've won at least two playoff games in each of the last, four seasons now, and they've got a chance to make it five in a row, which I believe might be unprecedented in NFL history.
Sure.
And certainly when you think about the history of the Chiefs, how many one-and-dones they've had, even if they lose this weekend, and I'm optimistic they will not, but even if they do, they won a playoff game this season. And that's just something as a Chiefs fan that will never, ever get old. And I hope I will never, ever take for granted. So I'm feeling pretty good right now.
Granny, you tweeted the other day, 5 years ago before Mahomes' first playoff game, the Chiefs franchise record in the postseason was 9-18, and they're back to 500 at 21-21, which is absurd. I mean, that's absolutely crazy.
Well, think about it. I mean, half a century of being like one of the most cursed franchises in the sport. Where did they rank, like 28th or 29th on like winning percentage?
That's correct. They were 28th from 66 to 2017 in franchise playoff win percentage. They are up to 12th. They went from 28th to 12th in 6 years.
Which is it's interesting that 500 is actually a 12th, which would be
that's right
above the median. But that also, the nature of the playoffs is that teams that have had dynasties will tend to be well over 500, and then everyone else is a little bit under 500.
Right.
But that just gives you an idea. We're like above the median in terms of the 32 teams after being one of the four or five worst in for half a century. That's what 5 years of Patrick Mahomes has balanced the scales from more than 50 years of Chiefs futility. It's just, it's a remarkable run. And we talked about this last week, but we'll see how far they go this year, but every win this year is just a little bit more special because the entire second half of the season, this was the year that the rest of the league thought that the Chiefs will get their comeuppance. And even if they lose this week, they won a playoff game. They've moved farther than all, but we're down to the final eight. So 24 teams would be very happy to be in the position the Chiefs are in right now.
Randy, this is a great place to start. We'll circle back to where Mahomes and the Chiefs sort of stand in the grand scheme of things. But getting into this Dolphins game, when we had you on last week and we're kind of previewing this game, one of the questions that we sort of were pondering was, does this team have the capability of flipping the switch? Does it have another gear that didn't reach in the regular season and maybe didn't need to reach in the regular season? And football is obviously different from your main sport that you podcast about, baseball. Like, you just, I don't think of baseball as being we can just, turn it on. We play 162 games and then, the playoffs. Certainly there are teams that go on their sort of weird postseason runs, but it's just not the nature of a single elimination tournament and all the strategy and game planning and everything that goes into winning an NFL football game. There definitely are teams that are capable of flipping the switch. And our question that we were discussing last week really was, do the Chiefs have that in them? I don't know about you, but flip switch.
I mean, if I thought it was easy as flipping a switch, I really wish the Chiefs had flipped that switch a little earlier in the season.
Sure,
we might have gotten a two or a one seed.
No kidding.
So I don't know if it's so much as flipping a switch as simply sifting through all of the, all of the weak spots, all of the deficiencies in this team, and through the process of trial and error, arriving at, if not the right answer, as close to the right answer as possible after 17 games. And I think that is something that the Chiefs have shown an ability to do over the last couple of years, particularly on defense, I would say, but also on offense. And that was my hope. It wasn't so much that, oh, you know, they're sleepwalking through the regular season. They're, you know, they're going to flip the switch. They're going to turn it on in the playoffs. That wasn't where my optimism lay last week. It was more in the sense that they were like asymptotically approaching the solution all season long. And they, you know, they were so close to figuring things out that just one or two more tweaks and they might be peaking at just the right time. And, you know, we saw signs of that late in the year with, you know, just simplifying the offense and getting Rashee Rice even more involved in the offense and, you know, eliminating targets to Sky Moore and MVS. And so what I think we saw in the Dolphins game was continuing to asymptotically approach the best case scenario offense given the talent on hand, right? I mean, obviously, Sky Moore is not out there. MVS, I think, had two targets. And, you know, Rashee Rice had, you know, eight receptions for 130 yards, maybe his best game as a pro in his first game of the playoffs. You know, most receiving yards by a Chiefs rookie in postseason history. Mm-hmm. You know, these are all good things. Travis Kelce looked better with the week off. He had some drops because it was 4 below 0. Mm-hmm. You know, I think I'll, you know, if there's ever a game in which, you know, I'll give somebody a pass for drops, it was this one. And if there's ever a player I'd give a pass to, it's Travis Kelce. So I think the offense that we saw, and then just heavily relying on Isaiah Pacheco, you know, go in and focusing the rushing game up the middle. It was just that's the strategy, right? And then playing turnover free ball. I mean, they had the very late turnover in garbage time with Clyde, but I mean, the game was done at that point. And especially given the frigid conditions, just holding on to the ball, that was something I was really worried about the whole game.
Right.
They played as close to mistake free ball as I think this team's capable of, not just in terms of physical mistakes on the field, but also just the mistakes of planning on the coaching side of where the ball's going to. This was pretty much mistake-free offense. And, you know, they scored 26 points. And, you know, if it were not for some questionable, you know, a questionable block in the back call on Juwan Taylor, if it wasn't for the elements, I mean, they could have easily scored a lot more. I mean, they scored on six, they had six red zone possessions. And, you know, if they do that, if they have six red zone possessions with this defense, they're going to probably win any game they play the rest of the season. So,
yeah, they're, you know, I'll take the red zone trips and take my chances that the Chiefs are going to figure out a way to punch it in. Just give me the ball down there as much as possible. You mentioned Rashee Rice's 130 yards. I just thought this was funny. He ended Saturday with the fourth most rookie receiving yards by a wide receiver in postseason history. He is now fifth because Puka Nacua set the record on Sunday with 181 yards by a rookie. Jeez. But Rashee is fifth and Jeremy Maclin is third, another Andy Reid rookie wide receiver in the playoffs. So, you know, all the talk about rookie wide receivers not being able to cut it in the Reid system, they sure figure it out by the end of the year. I want to talk, since we're talking about wide receivers, about the wide receiver that made his return to Arrowhead, of course, the Cheetah. You know, he had one good broken play, and other than that, got his ass totally jammed back to Cancun, as he tweeted today, by both Snead and McDuffie, but especially L'Jarius Snead. Just real quick, you know, what did it feel like to you to see Tyreek Hill in a big game at Arrowhead going against the Chiefs and not really able to do much all night?
I mean, obviously, it was terrifying having him there, but, you know, the combination of the elements, the combination of, you know, Tua Tagovailoa throwing the ball to him instead of Patrick Mahomes and, you know, having L'Jarius Sneed and Trent McDuffie. I wasn't, you know, I knew he was going to get his, you know, his yards, his catch. And he had the one play, which was vintage Tyreek. I mean, you know, it's easy to forget that was a bad throw from Tua.
Yes.
Like, it was underthrown, which is why it was pass interference in the first place. And, you know, I think what happened there is that McDuffie, you know, knew in the moment that he had committed interference. And there's always that, you know, just that natural psychological reaction when you're, you know, when you've been caught in the act, to immediately pull your hands back and make a big show of, I didn't do anything. And And then when he actually caught it, it kind of put him in a bad position to actually defend the play. He did try to make a tackle.
Right.
Tyreek was, you know, made a really good move to get out of it. Again, it's really cold, so probably that hurt with the tackle. Would have been better if he had just made the tackle and or had taken the pass interference, because it was still at the 15-yard line. So he let him slip away.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a human reaction to you know, knowing that you interfered. And again, the reason for the interference is that Tua vastly underthrew his receiver. So it was a fluke. I mean, it was essentially a fluke and a great play by a great player. But other than that, he had what, nine?
Four for nine.
Yeah.
Four catches for 9 yards outside that one.
Four catches for 9 yards.
Because
I think one or two of those were for negative plays. I mean,
right.
they were fantastic. And, you know, it's so weird because, you know, early in the season, the talk was how Trent McDuffie was really taking that leap forward and being going from, like, you know, very promising rookie to, oh, this guy's one of the best quarterbacks in the sport. And then sometime in December, we realized he's not even the best cornerback on the team. Like, Legarius, his, what, fourth season with the club, had ascended to a completely another level. And it's just fascinating because they have different styles, right? Like, Legarius is so much more physical at the line, so much, you know, maybe the best cornerback in the sport in terms of just jamming receivers, preventing them from getting out of their blocks. Obviously, there was the play, you know, the vintage play that got a lot of attention of you just having, I mean, it, you know, the conditions were slippery, and I think Tyreek, you know, didn't have good footing on the ice and was just jammed right into the ground, and I guess went through the ground straight to Cancun. But that's, you know, that's the play everyone will remember. But that's Legarius at his best. But there was, perhaps even more importantly, there was the fourth and two play, which,
yes,
I don't know if where they were, but both McDuffie and Legarius were lined up next to each other, and it was a pick play, and McDuffie was originally picked but recovered in time, you know, for there was a moment there, because Tyreek also tweeted about this play, and it looked like he was throwing some shade at his quarterback for basically saying, you know, the two of the best cornerbacks in the league, and I still got open, because there was a brief moment in time where he was open, but by the time Tua saw him and threw him the ball, McDuffie had recovered and batted it away, and it was a fourth and two play. So I mean, it was a turnover essentially. They played elite. When you look at what happened in throughout the sport over the weekend, and you know, the Cowboys with, you know, their vaunted defense giving up 48 to the Packers and the Browns. I mean, people are like, you know, if you were to rank defenses across the sport, the Chiefs, you know, I think we're what, second in the league in points allowed, but I don't know if the consensus was that they were the second best defense in the sport. There were a lot of people putting the Browns ahead of them, and a few were putting the Cowboys ahead of them. Browns gave up 45 to the Texans. So to see on, you know, a playoff stage, and again, we saw these guys in the playoffs last year. This is the benefit we have. We're spoiled. We have playoff experience. Not just the players, but us as fans, we know what this defense was capable of last year with rookies, how much better it got as the season went along into the postseason. But to see them come up on a stage like that, and yeah, the conditions were brutal, but I mean, they gave up one fluke bomb to the fastest guy in the sport and nothing else. It has to make you feel very good that the game plan, basically the strategy for winning a Super Bowl this year, the thesis is very much intact. You know, manage the game on offense, play mistake-free football on offense, and then just suffocate on defense. It worked to perfection in their first game.
To your point, Randy, the Chiefs are the only team to not allow 30 or more points in a game this year, and they actually have been even better than that, because their season high was 27 against the Green Bay Packers, who just dropped almost a 50-burger on Dallas in Dallas, a team that, obviously, as you just mentioned, was, you know, certainly one of the top three or four defenses in the NFL this year. The only other team to score more than 21 on them was the Broncos, who got 24 in that ridiculous fluky game where they got five turnovers on the Chiefs and only scored 24 points. And other than that, nobody scored more than 21 on them. And you kind of already mentioned it. I mean, Cleveland, which by, I think, EPA and success rate metrics was literally one of the greatest defenses ever, like certainly in the last, you know, of this millennium. We saw them get completely demolished by the Texans. We saw Dallas get demolished. So it's really crazy to think about not only how good this Chiefs defense has been, but how consistent they've been. And Obviously, these were ideal conditions for defense, but the Chiefs were able to move the ball on offense. We'll circle back to that and talk a little bit more about that in a minute. But I mean, at this point, you almost have to expect that they'll be able to continue doing this, even when they go up against maybe a little bit more suited for cold weather offenses in Buffalo. And then if they win next week, maybe in Baltimore.
Yeah. And the other thing is that it also is an indication that, you know, playoff Spags is real, right?
Exactly.
The real MVP of this season, Steve Spagnuolo, not only does his shit works in the playoffs. And he's proved it before. Obviously, he proved it the greatest you know, my shit works in the playoffs on defense performance of all time against the 2007 Patriots. So this is not a new thing with him. But it is something I think people forget about, is that nobody, I don't say nobody, but very few defensive coordinators game plan for a specific game, especially when they have some time to do so, better than Steve Spagnuolo. You know, which, you know, the 2 extra days here the Chiefs have to prepare for this Bills game.
Right.
That's no joke. And I think it matters almost more on the defensive side than on the offensive side. But also, you know, this season, this defense is his magnum opus, certainly since he joined the Chiefs, because, you know, he finally has the talent that he needs to really excel. He's made it work with mediocre defenses, despite not having the bulk of the draft capital on his side. And then when last year, when they, you know, they just loaded up on, you know, McDuffie and Karlaftis and Brian Cook and Leo Chenal, you know, and Joshua Williams and
Watson,
Jalen Watson.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
You know, somewhere around the midpoint of the 2022 season, this defense went from, you know, acceptably mediocre to, you know, the shining strength of the team. But what is so fascinating about this defense, I think, is that it's a very cerebral, not just a cerebral defense, a cerebral defensive game plan. And, you know, I've seen defensive coordinators who are too smart for their own good,
sure,
and try and create defensive game plans that are so complex that their own players don't understand it and don't understand where they're supposed to be and don't know how to set up and don't know how to adjust. I mean, I look back, I mean, Bob Sutton had a little bit of this. The best example, of course, is still the notorious Greg Robinson on the Stanford Field Chiefs, who, I mean, for, you know, even after he was hounded out of the NFL and went and he went to my alma mater, University of Michigan, and screwed up their defenses as defensive coordinator. And to the end, it was like, oh, you know, the system works if the players just execute it. But the problem is nobody could execute it because it's too damn complicated. Or just it just didn't make sense. The players could not buy in, or the players could not figure out exactly where they were supposed to be. And I remember that the playoff game against the Colts, where Peyton Manning was basically calling out exactly where they were doing before they were doing it, you know, at the line, and the Colts never punted, and, you know, the defense was might as well not have been on the field. So there's always a danger when you have a plan where you've got so many moving parts. And when you think about this defense, you know where they could be blitzing from any side. They could be dropping linemen into coverage while blitzing, you know, linebackers or even defensive backs. You had the great view of this game of the interception, where they set up in two high, rotated to one high right before the snap, and it was in, they basically safeties made a circle before.
Yeah,
yeah.
Switched back to two high right at the snap.
They did a 180 before the snap, and then 180 back to two high at the snap. And the guy who rotated back into two high was Mike Edwards, and was there to make the interception when two overthrew his receiver. So that it's not simple. It is complicated, but and I have to assume this is mostly by design. But they picked players. They've drafted guys who get it, who have the, you know, the intellectual capability of understanding what they're supposed to be doing, where they're supposed to be. And even with these guys, it took a long time for them to figure it out, because I remember last year, I heard, in the Super Bowl celebration in the clubhouse, some of the defensive players, the rookies, were kind of like laughing about how, they just won a Super Bowl. They just won the Super Bowl as rookies, and they still didn't understand the defense. Right, somebody said to the point where it's like, wait till next year when we actually understand what we're doing.
Mm-hmm. Turns out they
understand what they're doing now.
Right.
Mm-hmm. All of them do. And it's so that part of it is where they have a defensive coordinator who comes up with these brilliant but very intricate defensive plans. And I'm not claiming I understand them myself. I did not, I've never coached football, and I'm kind of learning as we go. I'm learning from this organization. But it's clear they're very intricate defensive plans, and he has the personnel to make it work. That is what is really, exciting about this defense. And, he has some more tricks up his sleeve. And, we'll see if the quarterbacks that he goes up against the rest of the way, because we're looking at Josh Allen. We're probably looking at Lamar Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Brock.
I mean, or C.J. Stroud. Like, either
or
one.
Or C.J. Right. Well, right. Lamar, maybe, I'm putting too much emphasis on his playoff history, which is, short but checkered.
Yeah.
Or just maybe, the type of quarterback that he is. He's certainly a lot better this year, and we have not seen him this year, so it's possible he's figured a lot of this out, but I do feel optimistic about that. But let's obviously get through Josh Allen first. Josh is really the one guy where, he's smart enough to figure this stuff out, but we've played the Bills very tight, over the years. Even this year when we lost, it was a 20-17 game where we, like so many other games, we beat ourselves. So, I'm feeling very good about where this defense is. If they can get to 21 or at least, or certainly 24 points on offense, we should be in this game very easily.
Let's turn over to the other side of the ball here, Ranny. And obviously, this game was very cold. It was officially the fourth coldest game in NFL history. If you watched the Dolphins offense, it looked like they were playing in the fourth coldest game in NFL history. Other than obviously the duck that Tyreek was able to track beautifully and turn into a touchdown. Wish we had somebody like him on our side of the ball. That was always a fun experience. They never entered the red zone. The Chiefs, on the other hand, scored on six of their first eight drives, had a couple of drops in there on the two drives that they didn't score out of those first eight, both essentially ended with drops or missed tracks by Mecole Hardman. They racked up over 400 yards of total offense. If you look at the three colder games in NFL history, the 1967 Ice Bowl, the 1981 AFC Championship, and the 2016 Vikings-Seahawks playoff game where Blair Walsh missed the 27-yarder to lose the game for the Vikings, the leading passers in those games threw for 191, 175, and 146 yards, respectively. Now, granted, some of those different eras, but Patrick Mahomes in this game went for 262 yards, and it felt like if Mecole Hardman tracks down a couple of those balls and Travis Kelce holds on to, one of the three drops that he has, he could have passed for 350, 400 yards in this game easily if he'd gotten a little bit more help from his receivers. So I have to ask at this point, is Patrick Mahomes the undisputed greatest cold weather, bad weather quarterback of all time?
I mean, I would say you could just take out the words cold weather and bad weather there and leave it at that, but I don't want to start that quite yet. I think you can make the case for it, right? I mean, like I think we talked about it last week as the temperature forecast just kept dropping and dropping. And it's like, if this game is 15 or 20 degrees, Tua's not going to be able to throw and we're going to be in great shape. But if it's below zero, I don't know if Patrick can throw, right? That was my concern. And so I would say the first couple throws of the game where he was throwing things, he was sailing things high.
Yep.
And I think it's a matter of gripping the ball, right? But I'll tell you, if you watch that game with no knowledge of what the temperature was,
exactly, yeah,
and nobody discussed it, I would, and you asked me at the end what how cold do you think it was there? I would have said probably it's probably 15 or 20 degrees. I would have thought it was a cold game like the Titans AFC Championship. But I mean, credit to the crowd for being pretty loud. Like maybe it wasn't 100% full, but it was close to it. They were making tons of noise. And dude, four below zero, like I went outside today and it's about that temperature here in Chicago. And I'm fine for about 4 minutes, but I have no idea how you sit out there for 4 hours. So
it's
that
unbelievable.
all of you
It's
people who
rough.
went out there, shout out to you because like it actually, I mean, I thought it'd be a miserable game to go to, and now I'm like kind of jealous. I mean, it looked like people were having a good time.
Yeah,
they were swag surfing and partying, and it was you would never have guessed from the crowd it was the fourth coldest game in NFL history.
It's crazy what a win does there, right? Just like the difference between winning that game and losing it for the
sure.
The vibes.
Well, I mean, I
Gosh.
Remember how cold the Lynn Elliott game was, and yeah, I'm miserable that is. I mean, that was maybe the coldest playoff game the Chiefs had before this one, but very different experience. Also, shout out to Harrison Butker, who none of the kicks were longer than 33 yard extra pointer, but like only one or two of those were even in doubt on six kicks, and we have a kicker who doesn't make excuses for cold weather, no matter
that's
how cold
exactly
it is.
Right, and you know what, this was a much colder game than in 1995.
It was now, like 15 or 20 degrees colder, which is
officially
insane to think about.
It was officially 16 degrees colder than it was at kickoff in the 1995 playoffs.
Yeah.
And
you would never have known from watching them. You would never have known. I mean, some of the kickoffs, more on the other side, I would say.
Yes.
Some of the kickoffs, it was to the point, I'm not sure, it wasn't clear if it was on purpose, if it was a reaction to being worried about slipping, I think, on the kickoff. Not so much about how far, because he had a couple touchbacks. I mean, he had some distance. But I do wonder if it was just more the grip of the cleats and worried that if you might accidentally pop one up and kick it like 10 yards. But again, it's like for most of the game, the way the Chiefs were playing, it didn't look like an all-time cold game. And like you said, Mahomes, first quarterback ever to throw for 200 yards in a game that was below zero. And cleared that with room to spare. We have to ask what Mecole Hardman was doing. I mean,
yes,
it's one thing. Okay. The first deep ball, I look like he just kind of lost it in the lights, maybe, or I was trying to
Agreed.
Make excuses for
those arrowhead lights
that Tyreek was talking about. That I mean,
maybe
does
so.
Have the biggest drop rate of any stadium at night. I mean, that's a thing. But
I'll say that the second one, it's I'm not sure he realized in the moment he was playing a football game.
Yeah,
he looked like he was just on going for a jog or on a track in a track meet. Like it didn't seem to occur to him that a ball might be thrown in his direction.
Mm-hmm.
So that that was, I believe, where they did call a. Was that the one they called the penalty?
No,
on?
They didn't. It was a very clear DPI. He had him by the behind the jersey, and McColl, instead of playing the play out, and as
and
you
maybe
said,
that's
the ball
what it was.
Was
maybe he's just like,
him,
well, like they touched me, therefore I cannot be held accountable for not trying to catch a ball.
Right.
It's the man has two Super Bowl rings with the Kansas City Chiefs, and and I'm glad that they brought him back because we need somebody who could at least be a deep threat, anybody, and maybe he can be that guy. And if not, then at least he can run some jet sweeps, I suppose. But again,
he
like
tried
said,
one of those on Saturday and it went for -4. So I don't know.
This is true. Maybe he can't do that either. He's at least done it in the past, but but with all that, Patrick Mahomes threw for 262 yards and no interceptions and also, two rushing attempts for 41 yards. So,
he's just the best.
Rushing Patrick is still, still the most underrated commodity in the sport.
He is. Let's talk about one reason that he was able to throw for all those yards, which was not Mecole Hardman or any of the guys that have failed them throughout the year, but it's the big three. Right. Sky Moore. I mean, any of those guys. It's instead Kelce and Rice. Now, Pacheco obviously contributed a ton. I called it the big three because on the ground, he's been amazing. But, Kelce and Rice were great this game. And despite Kelce's three drops, like you said, elements and all those things considered, the first 10 plays on offense were just to these three players. It was all plays to either Pacheco runs or Rice and Kelce targets. And the trio finished the night a combined 289 yards from scrimmage of the team's 409. So, 120 for the rest of the other guys. And both the touchdowns, of course, Pacheco rushing touchdown and the Rice crosser. I think the team has found the identity on offense, at least as far as, they've been trying to tell us all year, we're looking for what works. We're trying to figure it out. And then things have kind of clicked a couple weeks ago. Certainly the Bengals game, everyone could point to as one of the first recent games where it felt like the offense kind of figured stuff out. And a lot of that was because they featured Pacheco and Kelce and Rice. Is that that's the formula moving forward, right? Like, do those three have to be 75% of your offense?
Yeah, no, that's very simple. It's they simplify things to Rice, Kelce, Pacheco. Both, you know, they didn't use Pacheco much as a receiver in this game, but you right. know, they certainly can, and they probably will. And then what they seem to be doing, and what I think they absolutely should do, is then you then mix in the occasional design play for Noah Gray. He had one catch in this game for 20 yards. Nice big play,
really great catch by him.
Yeah. And then you have the one. If you can complete one deep pass to Justin Watson, that just keeps the defense honest, keeps them from completely moving up to the line. He had two catches for 20 yards in this game. And then, everything else you get is a bonus. It's not saying you'd never throw to the other guys, but you don't rely on MVS, Richie James, Mecole Hardman. I'm trying to think, I guess Justin
that's
Ross,
pretty much,
maybe.
Yeah, right. Like, that's
I
really
don't
it.
Even know. But yeah, essentially, yeah, the big three are 75 to 80% of your targets. Maybe you mix in Clyde in there, but even Clyde, it's the gravy on top. But
yes.
Gray and Watson are the two guys that I do think are going to be involved, even if it's just for like two targets a game.
Mm-hmm.
But they can make a big difference. And then you just avoid the dumb mistakes, avoid the dumb plays. They had the direct snap to Pacheco, but it wasn't a handoff play, which led to the fumble against the Raiders.
He faked the handoff, but I liked him faking that handoff and spinning around. That was nice.
No, that worked well. And I in that situation where a pitch back to Mahomes is almost safer than like the handoff, I feel like.
Yeah.
And you can tell they're setting something up there.
Yeah.
Like we get to the Super Bowl if we get there. There's something in there where Pacheco's not keeping the ball and it's going to Patrick and they're going to be doing some razzle dazzle. But like, Blake Bell wasn't targeted, which was probably a good thing. Like,
yes,
just simplify things, but really 80% of the targets to Pacheco, Rice and Kelce. And that's really all, that's all it is. It's not maybe a formula for getting 42 points.
Right.
But that's the whole point. You get to 24 to 27 points. They got 26 and they were never challenged in this game. Like that's all they need to do.
A safe, effective 26, 27 is all this team needs. They don't need to go throw for the 80-yard bomb every play because first of all, they're not capable of it, honestly. And second of all, they don't need to. So before we go to the Bills, which is obviously the upcoming opponent, we'll wrap it up with a little Mahomes bit. He breaks a all-time tie with Troy Aikman, Aaron Rodgers, and Roger Staubach in playoff victories as a starting quarterback with his 12th. He is currently the only player in NFL history with exactly 12. So he's eighth by himself. Just an unbelievable start here in these only six seasons, passing Aaron Rodgers, who's been, arguably outside of Tom Brady, the most prolific and successful quarterback of this generation. And they're Patrick sitting there with 12. Just what are your thoughts on what he's doing in the postseason so far? His effectiveness, his resume so far through six seasons, pretty inarguable. I know Tom Brady won his first 10 games. Everyone always goes back to that. But like he wasn't really the reason that trio of Super Bowls happened early on. That was very clearly defense and fourth quarter drives. But like what do you think about Patrick so far with his 12th win?
Well, it's interesting you say that about Tom Brady because if anything, the Chiefs are sort of adaptive. They're maintaining their dynastic aspirations, much like the Patriots did. You have to adapt or die, right? You cannot. You have to adapt to the talent on hand. You have to constantly replenish the talent. And like the Patriots did this for 19 years, which is just, to say it's unprecedented is to insult it. I mean, it's like twice as long as basically any other dynastic run in NFL history.
Yeah.
But, the Chiefs are, if you start this with the start of the Patrick Mahomes era in 20, this is year six. And they're making those adjustments. But what's fascinating to me is that the Patriots started with Tom Brady being a game manager and an elite defense, and then evolved so that by 2007, they were this fire-breathing offense that just bludgeoned people with points. the Chiefs started in that mode.
Yeah, they did.
And here we are in year six, and they're asking Patrick Mahomes to basically be a game manager. In this case, unlike Tom Brady as a, you know, in his first year as a starter, you know, a laughably overqualified game manager. The point is, he's in that role, but you know he has, you know, Patrick Mahomes in his pocket, right? That's mm-hmm. that's the event. But it's essentially he only needs to be a game manager because you have this elite defense. But the difference, you know, the difference between, like, you know, Patrick Mahomes game manager and like Alex Smith game manager is that you know that it's there if you need it.
Yeah.
That, you know, if you need a game winning drive in the fourth quarter, you know, God love Alex Smith. But that's the one thing, as much as, you know, I loved every, you know, everything he did for this organization, you know, what, twice, at least twice, the Titans lost, the Steelers lost, actually, and the Colts lost three times.
Yeah.
Three playoff games. Two of them, the Chiefs blew a huge lead. The Steelers game was tight kind of the whole way through. And in the Steelers one, maybe I won't fault them too much for that, because the 2-point conversion, there was a stupid holding call. But certainly the other
Thanks,
two games.
Carl.
Yeah, exactly. Where they blew, but the other two games, they blew a huge lead, but they had the ball down by what, 1 point. So a field goal wins the game, and he wasn't able to do it. You know, you've got that Patrick Mahomes magic in the pocket if you need it.
Right.
But essentially they've reversed what Tom Brady and you know, the course. But, you know, I think this is what is necessary for this organization to do if they want to keep this going for another 5, 10, 12, 15 years, for as long as Patrick Mahomes wants to play. So that part of it is really exciting, because, you know, the Patriots have set this benchmark, and in a way I'm glad they did, because they've demonstrated the limits of what is possible.
Mm-hmm.
Which before them, you would not even think that a team could extend a dynasty for, you know, or this kind of run of success for more than about 6-7 years. That was basically the limit. And now, you know, no, it is possible. You can actually win your division, whatever, 14 years in a row, whatever the hell the Patriots
right.
did, 15 right. out of 16. You know, you keep Bernard Pollard the hell away from Patrick Mahomes, but other than that, you know, this could go indefinitely. But in terms of, you know, just his legacy, like we're talking about, you mentioned, you know, Aaron Rodgers, Roger Staubach, Troy Aikman. Joe Montana
mm-hmm.
is at 16 playoff victories. That's the mm-hmm. second most all time. Like, there's a reason why we've already just, you know, the argument is whether or not Mahomes will challenge Brady for number one. But, like, number two is, he is not there yet, but, like, it's not even remotely a stretch to say he will be one of the two best quarterbacks of all time. But in terms of playoff victories, there's a plausible path for him to get there next year.
Yeah,
he's only four behind Joe Montana. If you know, he has an extended run this season, if we get to the Super Bowl, he's in line to at least tie, if not break that record, by getting to the, you know, we get into the Super Bowl again next year, at, you know, before his 30th birthday. that's absurd. It's just, it's so crazy. Absurd. But here's actually my favorite little Mahomes nugget that I was thinking about recently. You guys want to have I think an underrated reason why the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes are maybe hated is too strong a word, but just kind of the rest of football is kind of sick of them.
Please tell us, Randy.
Do you realize how many teams have been eliminated by Patrick Mahomes? Let me take you through this. The entire AFC South.
Yep.
The Jaguars, the Texans, the Titans, and the Colts.
Mm-hmm.
All four have lost a playoff. Your season is end. We're not just talking about, oh, you know, lost a big game. You lost a playoff game. The worst mm-hmm. fate imaginable. They've lost to Patrick Mahomes in the playoffs.
Yep.
The AFC North. The Steelers.
Yep.
The Bengals.
The Browns.
The Browns, we've got a chance to finish off a second division if we face the Ravens in a week, right? In a week and
That's
a half.
Right.
That's almost two full divisions.
Unbelievable.
The Dolphins now, we just added the Dolphins and the Bills.
Yep.
Sure. Two out of four.
That's two out of four.
The Jets haven't given us an opportunity.
The Jets and the Patriots. The Patriots are the only team that he's actually had a chance to. And that one sticks in my craw, obviously. But
yes,
like, obviously.
The Jets and the Patriots are the only ones left. And then the AFC West,
the whole he hasn't
faced any of them in the playoffs because he's eliminated them from ever winning the division.
Right.
The entire AFC.
Yep.
With the exception of the Jets and the Patriots, and then the Ravens are on hold right now. But like, there's a chance we'll, you know, in 10 days, there'll be two teams out of 15 that have not personally suffered, you know, a season-ending fate at the hands of Patrick Mahomes in six seasons. That's
crazy.
Insane.
That's crazy.
It's insane. Like, you know, we need to, you know, we're still trying to figure out a nickname for him. I propose just calling him the Eliminator.
Yeah, that's good.
It's just all he does is just eliminates franchise after franchise has seen their seasons come to an end. And so yeah, the whole, you know, the name Patrick Mahomes, he's Baba Yaga.
Yes.
He's, you know, he's the boogeyman. He's the guy you tell ghost stories to scare your children to sleep.
And it's so funny how you can kind of see the momentum for that scared slash hatred changing every time he wins. Then you get a whole new group of fans, right, that jump on the bandwagon of hating him and hating the Chiefs. And now Taylor Swift or the Chiefs get all the calls or just whatever it is that they want to complain about. It's like, oh, all you have to do is click on a Twitter profile. You go, okay, you're a fan of an NFL team. Oh, then that's why you hate the Chiefs, because obviously you've lost some horrific, horrible, ridiculous game to the Chiefs. So, yep, I am with you there. He has been just checking them off, making a list and checking it twice.
I actually think it'd be interesting to pull, if you could pull NFL fans and about their feeling. I wonder what kind of a divide would be. Just simply your favorite team is an AFC versus an NFC team.
Right.
Really think NFC. Yes. I mean, you know, he's beat the Niners and the Eagles, so like, you know, he's
right.
I think it's going to be a hard ask for him to eliminate every NFL team in the playoffs. That would be difficult. True. But
he'll have to get 16 rings or whatever.
But, yeah, yeah. But
he'll,
the AFC,
he'll
the AFC,
give it a shot.
The AFC. I mean, you know. I prefer never having the Raiders, Chargers, or Broncos, you know, be in a position to even play him in the playoffs. But, you know, at some point it would be, it, you know, it doesn't seem at all far-fetched for him to, you know, eliminate every single AFC team in the playoffs.
Sure.
By the time he's, you know, 35. I mean, I guess it would require the Jets to make the playoffs, which may be a tall order, but.
And the Patriots. That might be a tough one too now without old Bill. Speaking of Bill, let's talk about the Bills. They obviously took care of the Steelers, 31-17, a game that got a little closer than expected. Mm-hmm. The Bills jumped out 21-0. Steelers kind of scored with 10 minutes left to make it a 7-point game. It would get no closer than that. The Bills did also get a little banged up in this game. Terrell Bernard, their linebacker, and their punter Sam Martin picked up injuries in this game. We'll see, obviously, the length of both of those, but we talked about earlier that the Chiefs are going to have two extra days to prep for this game. The Bills play on Monday. The Chiefs played on Saturday. Games on Sunday. What are your initial thoughts about a seventh or an eighth matchup in the Mahomes era between the Bills and the Chiefs? The Bills having gone 3-1 in the regular season, but of course the Chiefs go 2-0 in the playoffs. So this is the seventh time. That's right. Seventh game between them. We all immediately think of 13 seconds first, because that was just the most epic, ridiculous ending in game of all time. But, you know, the Chiefs also denied the Bills a Super Bowl appearance in 2020 with that AFC Championship blowout. That's got to stick in their craw too. What are your thoughts on Chiefs v. Bills number seven?
Yeah, you know, it's funny when I was looking at all the different teams, you know, that the Patrick Mahomes has eliminated, it works out because he hasn't faced many teams twice. In fact, he's only faced one team twice. And that's the team that he's going to face a third time now. Like the Bills are looking at potentially being eliminated by Patrick Mahomes in the playoffs three times in 4 years.
Crazy.
You know, that psychologically, yes, they won the regular season game. You know, good for them, but Part of the fun of being a Chiefs fan right now is knowing it doesn't matter what, you know, what our record is, what seed we are, where the game is.
Yeah.
You know that Patrick Mahomes is on your team. Every opponent you face is scared shitless.
As they should.
There's just, yep. I mean, they absolutely should, but like, yeah, you can only imagine what's going to, like, if we lose to this guy again.
Right.
And yes, this time they can say this time is different because this time it's in Buffalo. Well, okay, it's in Buffalo. Patrick Mahomes has a better winning percentage on the road,
yeah.
And not just winning percentage, but like better passer rating, higher completion percentage, I believe. His ratio of touchdowns to interceptions all slightly better on the road in his career.
If I may, doesn't that kind of go back to his like back against the ropes type of mentality? Third down percentages and, you know, fourth quarter numbers. And like every time the moment keeps right, I would consider a road game to be that type of profile for him, where it's like,
it does seem
okay,
to be.
I've got to step up.
It is crazy, you know, when you look at statistically, you know, how Patrick Mahomes is like, you know, the greatest quarterback ever, you know, certainly with a certain number, you know, yeah, as much playing time as he has, right? Just and yet somehow not only is he better in basically every high leverage breakdown you can do, like you said, in third downs, in you know, fourth quarters of close games, et cetera, but by actually a kind of absurdly significant margin, he's better. And it's the sample size. I mean, I wrote about this 2 or 3 years ago, and I was making the Michael Jordan comparison for the Ringer, that if when you rank, you know, quarterbacks by whatever passer rating or, you know, adjusted not yet yards per attempt, et cetera, you know, he's at the top, but it's the margin is reasonable. If you break it down to like, you know, his EPA per play on third down situations, he's like double the second best. It's like it's breaking the sport kind of loss.
Yeah.
Now that gap probably was reduced this year because, you know, this was his worst year statistically through, you know, I would say through circumstances almost entirely out of his control. I think he let it get to him at times.
Yeah.
So maybe it affected him, but like very quietly this game, he played exceptionally well especially when you consider the weather. You know, 23 of 41, you know, his completion percentage was actually pretty low, but like, there were at least what, three or four drops in this game.
Big ones, you know,
big one, third, some of them were third down ones. I mean, again, McColl didn't even try for a few.
Yeah.
You know, they had the touchdown called back. Like, and then if you just watch like the clips of all of his incompletions or they were throwaways. Some of them were just, you know, like deliberate throwaways.
Yeah.
The number of times he threw a ball that missed its target, extremely small. Like he just, he was on his game. He is like, to me, there is no indication that he is not as good a quarterback as he has been. And there's no reason to think at age 28, with the experience he has, with the athleticism he still possesses, you know, his scrambling ability, his elusiveness in the pocket, he didn't get sacked in this game. And yeah, okay, we don't want to read too much into it. The Dolphins were, you know, Justin Houston played in this game, so like, you know, their defensive line had some issues, and
yeah, they were banged up.
Yeah, Donovan Smith looked great. I'll tell you that. Like, he, you know, he looked like an all-star left tackle there, but like, I don't think that was entirely him. But like, you know, the pocket was generally there for Mahomes, but like, he played extremely well. Yeah, I think that this game being on the road doesn't concern me. If anything, it'll just be it'll just make Bills fans that much more nervous because they have to watch it in person. The weather's, I'm hearing, you know, 15 to 20 degrees. It'll be cold, which is fine. We'll see if there's, you know, a snow element that just introduces randomness, but I would be very happy with, you know, clear conditions and just cold. I don't feel that home field advantage. I mean, it's always great to have it on your side, but I don't feel that the lack of it is really going to be an issue here at all.
Does it bother you at all, Randy, or give you any additional anxiety when you know that the Chiefs are 2-0 against the Bills in the playoffs? Obviously, one of those required an all-time 13-second comeback and winning a coin toss to be able to snatch victory from the jaws of defeat. But does it give you any anxiety at all? Obviously, listen, we all know that Bills fans are feeling it, right? Like, they know that we're 2-0 against them in the playoffs. They know Patrick Mahomes is coming to town. I get it. They won't admit it, but they're feeling a little anxious. Does it give you any anxiety at all to face a team that you've beaten twice in the playoffs, but that you know is good? I mean, we know the Bills are good. And I watched the game today. I mean, they're riding a win streak where they essentially have been playing basically playoff games for, you know, a month or more because they were really on the brink of elimination and they've been able to pull those games out. But they haven't really played an impressive game since, you know, they beat the Chiefs barely. They blew out the Cowboys, but they haven't really played a super impressive game. What's kind of your confidence level facing up against this Bills team?
I'm I'm reasonably confident about playing the Bills in general. Like you said, like, you know, they that win against the Chiefs, you know, they may not even make the playoffs without that.
Right.
And that started them, you know, they had lost to the Eagles in overtime their previous game. They were 6-6 going in. They win that game and then they blew out the Cowboys 31-10 the next week. But like we just saw with the Cowboys. Yeah, the Cowboys, there may have been a little bit of a paper tiger on their defense.
Yeah, right.
And then they beat the Chargers by 2 points.
Yep.
The Patriots.
The Easton Stick Chargers.
The Easton Stick Chargers. They beat they actually struggled to beat the Patriots.
Yep.
They you know, they did beat the Dolphins, but that game was a little bit close. And that, you know, that was for the division. But having what we saw from the Dolphins and how they were playing late in the year, that doesn't look nearly as impressive. And then, yeah, they beat the Steelers comfortably today. But like, you know, after being up 21-0, the Steelers kind of made a game of it.
And no TJ Watt.
Quarterback. Right. These are not like we are the best. They have not played a team, you know, remotely as good as we are. Since then, right? You go back before that, they destroyed the Jets 32-6. Okay, yay. I don't know if that's a Zach Wilson game. I don't really don't think it matters if it was a Zach Wilson game or a Trevor Siemian game. They lost to the Broncos.
I believe that was actually a Tim Boyle game, but I'd have to double check. But in any case,
yeah, does it matter? No,
no.
You know, they and then going back, what's their most impressive win of the season? Well, they beat the Dolphins 48-20 in week 4. That might have been the week after the Dolphins had put up 70 and people thought they were like the best team in football. But the just from what we saw from the head-to-head matchup, where the Chiefs made so, you know, so many self-inflicted errors and still lost by 3 points.
Yep.
Right. Like it was that doesn't worry me. What worries me is Josh Allen.
Right.
What worries me is the guy today just like, you know, scored a 52-yard rushing touchdown. Where, you know, it was we think of him as a guy who's just so big and strong, he can sort of bowl over people, and he certainly has that in the club in his bag. But he also has the, I'm just going to run faster than you, and then make a cutback like a running back and completely lose a defender and then find an open lane and then basically beat everyone to the end zone. That's kind of scary. But again, we're comparing the Steelers defense minus TJ Watt to the Chiefs defense. And this is to me I'm betting on the Chiefs defense here. I'm betting that they will, you know, Spags will have a way to game plan for him, because you have to game plan for the broken play. You have to game plan for Josh Allen as a runner.
Sure.
Which is different because it's a broken play almost by definition. They might have a few designed runs, sure, certainly, but most of what you worry about with Josh Allen is the broken play where he just takes off upfield, and whether that means you have to have a constant spy on him, or, you know, confuse him in other ways, I don't know. Or you just accept the fact that, you know what, once or twice in a game, he's gonna pick up 20 or 30 yards on the ground. And that's just the price you pay to contain him otherwise with the passing game. So he's the wild card here. And you know, I think this is going to be obviously a much, even though the Dolphins scored more points and had one of the best offenses in football, just from a point standpoint, this I think will be a much greater test for our defense than what we saw against Miami.
I agree. And I was thinking about their weapons just as I was kind of preparing this game. And I mean, yeah, you know, Diggs has kind of been down a little bit, but they're tight ends. Both Knox and Kincaid are both very, very good. We all know what Gabe Davis is capable of, even though it's just because he runs behind idiot defenders. It's not really that he's a good wide receiver. I think Gabe Davis is one of the biggest fraud performers in big games I've ever seen. He just, I don't know what happens, but
did you say in big games?
In big games, big game,
in big
game
games, where, dude, he scored 200 yards in the.
I know, and that was one of the biggest fraud performances I've ever seen. He just ran right by that idiot from that we sent to the Vikings afterwards. What was that guy? He looked like Patrick Mahomes microwaved. You know who I'm talking about?
Mike Hughes.
He just ran right by him, and Mike Hughes fell down. And anyway, my point being,
no,
Tyron Matthew was out that game.
Tyron Matthew wasn't out that game. He was out after the first drive, in a game that they said they game planned entirely for Matthew to be the linchpin of the defense. Right. And then first drive, he gets concussion.
Sorry.
Is just that the weapons around him, you know, you've also got James Cook, who's been playing very, very well. Khalil Shakir, who scored this pinball touchdown today,
Yes, that
that
was
was
impressive
just
too.
a very, very impressive. I mean, he's got the secondary weapons that the Chiefs, after having, Pacheco, Rice, and Kelsey, don't have. They don't match them six deep on the weapons. So not only is Josh Allen probably the most physically impressive quarterback I've ever seen, just from pure traits, but then they've got guys on offense that can take a broken play and house it. And so I'm just, that's the part I'm worried about, is that their depth on offense, their pieces are pretty impressive to me.
Yeah, I think that's, that is the matchup of this game. Their offensive weapons against our defense. And in the first matchup, I mean, we held them to 20 points. And I think that my expectation, my thesis for why I'm still pretty confident that the Chiefs can win this game is that the Chiefs' offense, as it is constructed today, I am confident in saying we'll get to 21 points. And, the defense has already shown the ability to hold this Bills team to under 21 points. And, ultimately, that's what it takes. I think this is going to be, I don't know, a 24-17 game. It seems like a reasonable expectation. It's not going to be the 42-36 shootout that we had, what, just 2 years ago. God, it feels like a lot longer. But this is a very different team, and I think finally, maybe the after this, the way they strangled the life out of the Dolphins is that. The national perception is catching up to the reality that this is a team that is a defense first ball club. But I think this is a game where they can really put really put that message out that they are built around their defense. If they can shut Josh Allen down in a way they haven't done before in the playoffs.
Completely agreed. Rani, once again, super appreciate you breaking down the playoffs with us. For anyone listening, I haven't plugged your Twitter account in a while. That is at JAZAYERLI. Hopefully, schedules permitting, we can talk next week about either the AFC Championship preview or what the hell went wrong in Buffalo.
Well, as long as we're talking, that means that the Chiefs were playing and hopefully will continue playing. So I'm always happy to talk to you guys, especially in January and February. So
Yes.
we'll talk one way or the other. I may have something coming out of the ringer here sometime in the next week or two. I'm hoping this week we'll see where that leads. But just keep an eye on my Twitter feed or refresh the ringer. It'll be about the Chiefs, obviously. That I'm a one trick pony at this point, but
It's
it's a really good trick.
a great
Writing about this,
trick.
writing about the Patrick Mahomes Chiefs in the twilight of my writing career has been quite the way to ride off into the sunset. It's been very
It
enjoyable.
is our favorite trick, so we appreciate it. We will be plugging that when that comes out, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right. Sounds good, guys.